You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to episode 179 of Cowboys Rack and Free, the podcast. My name is Joel Penfield. As always, joined by Philip Slavin. Philip, we have actual football to talk about this week.
Don't tease me, JP. Don't tease me. Don't lie to me here. Don't dangle the carrot in front of the horse and then pull it away at the last second. Okay, that's what we thought we had last week. We were ready to record our preview.
Like 45 minutes from recording. And then Kelly Hines from the Tulsa World, who we had on the previous podcast to discuss the Tulsa game, said that, you know, she announced that the game was being pushed back a week because Tulsa only had 7 practices because of they had to halt practice, like we talked about last week, because they had a little bit of an outbreak on the team. This has nothing to do with new cases. This is not going to cause the game to not be played, but with both teams having a bye, it was easy enough to move the game back, Oklahoma State accommodated. And so we're going to play this Saturday rather than playing this past week.
Yeah, I was literally recording with the Golden Hurricast. It's a TU podcast. We were wrapping it up. We're feeling real good. And then the Hines tweet was seen. And it was like, well, I guess this can get play used later because it's not as important to get out before Saturday. But by the way, if you want another perspective on the game beforehand, go check out the Golden Hurricast. There's a some guys that cover TU, they've got a podcast that's pretty good. Just give you some Tulsa perspective. I always like to listen to some stuff from the opponent heading into each week. It just gives me a little more knowledge, and I feel like I can sound smart and know more. So go give them a follow, go give them a check out.
Yeah, we are recording this on Sunday night, watching Sunday night football. This weekend, it's been weird, obviously, with, you know, either limited capacity crowds or no fans. But being able to watch college football in the NFL in a year that has been so weird and so awful in so many different capacities, it's given me just a little bit of normal. I hope that you have felt the same way, I'm sure.
I mean, Fox was pumping sound in.
Yeah.
And I mean, look, my family was in town. I'm watching football. Parents are here. Got 2 kids. So it's not like I was just hardcore locked in as usual. No, I did watch the games. Basically, it meant I could watch one game. I wasn't doing as much flipping. So, like, I watched Kansas State, Arkansas State. I didn't really watch a whole lot of the Iowa State game. I didn't really watch much of the West Virginia. Like, once I found a game I was going to lock into, I locked into. However, you know, Fox was pumping in game sound. So it really didn't feel that different.
No, I mean, I'll be honest.
From a TV viewing perspective, like, yeah, you, and if your angles are the way they are, it's not like you spend all the game going, oh, let's check out, let's see what's in the crowd. So I don't know. I was all right. I think it feels weird because we know in the back of our mind what's really going on. But I was just happy to watch some football, football, sloppy football, not good Big 12 football, but football.
Football nonetheless. Yeah. Football nonetheless. We're also recording on Sunday because my wife and I are pretty much on baby watch at this point. We didn't want to risk recording our preview on Wednesday or Thursday when the unknown, with all the unknown that's to come. So,
yeah, this is going to be it's any time now for you, bud.
Pretty much. Yeah. It is. It could be tomorrow. It could be 4 days. We have no idea. That's the hilarious part that we've noticed when you get a due date from the doctor that, yay, that's the due date. But then you get 2 weeks out and you're like, what is time? I have no idea.
Yeah. I remember those days. They were not that long ago.
Yeah.
It's a weird, like, it is the calm before the storm.
Yes.
Where there's the stress of it coming, but you also have to be like, You just gotta be ready. You gotta be on the edge of your seat, ready to go for whenever it happens. And then it's a lot of fun, and then it's a lot of work forever.
Yep.
And ever. And ever, amen.
All right, let's get into some football here. We're gonna start. So this was the depth chart that came out last Monday for the game. I'm sure there'll be a new one that'll come out when Gundy has his availability every Monday, like he normally does.
Well, and don't assume we won't have like what happened with Oklahoma or West Virginia, you know, where, well, let's say more Oklahoma than West Virginia. Oklahoma, West Virginia had guys out from suspension. Oklahoma had a number of players and starters out due to coronavirus. So just because we know what the depth chart is, those are the guys who are supposed to start. We'll have to see who actually gets to start when the game kicks off, if everybody's healthy and ready to go.
Right. So Philip, we don't need to read the whole too deep. You can go on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, whatever, and see all this. But what are some of your, and just some initial thoughts across the board from what you saw on the 2D for Oklahoma State for this coming game?
And understand, it's just based off the facts that I have. I did not expect to see Cole Birmingham as the starter at right guard. I thought maybe that that Hunter Woodard would in that spot. He is a class older. He has seemingly had a little more experience. He's actually started the game, so I thought Hunter Woodard would potentially get that right guard spot. You see him as the backup behind West Virginia transfer Josh Sills at left guard, and Cole Birmingham, a redshirt freshman, is going to start there at right guard. That's big, especially when you realize his backup is Preston Wilson, who is also a redshirt freshman. So your right guard position is locked down by two young guys. And really, I think that's the big thing. If you look across offensive line, something I've been trying to pay a lot of attention to, both the where things stand and recruiting lately. You know, you've got Tevin Jenkins, who's considered one of the best offensive linemen in the Big 12. He's your starting left tackle. Behind him is Taylor Maturko. So your backup left tackle is a redshirt freshman. Your Josh Sills is your starting left guard. He's started quite a few games for West Virginia. He's been an all Big 12 guy. He's starting at left guard. That's nice. You get him for 2 years. Behind him, Hunter Woodard, a sophomore, true sophomore. I think it's true sophomore, maybe. Either way,
yeah,
he is a sophomore. Then you get Ry Schneider at center, senior. He started games before. He's played games. You feel good there. Behind him, Tyrese Williams, sophomore. Like, this goes down the line. Cole Birmingham and Preston Wilson, redshirt freshman. Hunter Anthony at right tackle. You feel, okay, he started some games. That's who I thought would be there. He's a sophomore. And behind him, Jake Springfield is the guy who got the scholarship. He is a redshirt freshman. He's the one they put on scholarship. You saw that really cool video when he got that announcement. So he's a guy who was a walk-on who got awarded a scholarship for playing as well. He's a redshirt freshman. The word redshirt freshman, you're hearing a lot. That's because all five redshirt freshmen, everybody in that class is on the two deep. The big concern for offensive line, this is something I wanted to talk about. I know we're kind of going off. We'll get back to the depth chart in a minute. Watching the games this weekend, watching Iowa State's offensive line struggle. It's an offensive line that struggles every year. But, you know, this was supposed to be the year, but they struggled. Kansas State, five brand new starters. They were bad. And I don't know if it was necessarily bad because it's a lack of talent, but they were five brand new starters who didn't have an offseason. Iowa State, same situation. I am not so much concerned with the potential and maybe some of the talent that is on this offensive line. I am concerned with having this many young guys. You got three guys who officially knew supposed to be the guys starters, with Ry Schneider, Cole Birmingham, and Hunter Anthony, Josh Sills, who's new to the program. You got a whole lot of redshirt freshmen. This is a offensive line who didn't have an off season to prepare. Offensive line to me is the one position that needs the most reps, the most time together, the most working together, the most practice. You look at the in the NFL, like one of the reasons that they say that offensive line play has been so bad in the NFL as of late. You see some more bad NFL lines as they reduce the number of practices, and that's the group that needs the most practice to get up to speed. I am a little worried about this offensive line. It was one of the best ones in the Big 12 heading into the offseason. Now, it's still one of the better offensive lines in the Big 12, but I have real concern about this offensive line heading into this season, especially just for the early parts of the year, until we really see how quickly they can gel.
Yeah, continuity is definitely going to be something to watch early on and see what they've been able to do in the 17 or so practices that they were able to get involved in camp with this group at 2D. I will say I was a little bit concerned when I saw redshirt freshmen, you know, just young guys. But for a couple things kind of helped call me, bring me back down to earth and think this is going to be okay. One, we plug it a lot, but Adam Lunt and Mitch Gith over at Tape Doesn't Lie, they do a fantastic job breaking everything down. They did an offensive breakdown last week. And Adam is pretty much an offensive line guru, really helped me become smarter watching the game in that regard. But he talked about Cole Birmingham. And when they did their recruiting class, like the 2019 recruiting class or 2018 recruiting class a couple years ago, and they broke everybody down based on high school film and stuff, they had Cole Birmingham as an early impact guy, a first or second year, you know, maybe not right away, but a guy that's going to come in as a redshirt freshman or a redshirt sophomore and going to make an impact and going to play. And the way that they talk about the way that he plays, it fits the scheme, and he is the type of guy that's going to work early on as a player. So I don't feel near as bad. Hunter Anthony got some time last year. I think he's going to be okay. I think he's going to improve quite a bit. What gives me hope is having a guy like Charlie Dickey as the coach, as the positional group coach. You saw the improvement that they had from 2018 to 2019 as a group, and having to mix and match and shuffle with some of the injuries that happened on the offensive line last year. You're going to continue to see that improvement, and seeing all these young guys that were freshmen or sophomores when Charlie Dickey came in, that means they're getting that coaching from the minute that they step on campus. They're going, so I feel a little bit better about them. It is definitely going to be a concern. It's going to be something to watch early on, and I'm not expecting them to be perfect in any way, but I know that at the end of the day, this group is going to be okay because of the guy that's leading them in the locker room and on the practice field day in, day out.
Yeah, and again, it's less to do with – it's not that I don't trust Charlie Dickey. I think Kansas State has a really good offensive line coach now as well. It's more to do with the offseason being what it is.
Right. Yeah, that's going to be a problem.
Having these young guys and so many new faces and so many guys in positions they weren't in last year is how quickly can they gel? How much time have they actually had to work together to be there and practice? Like, it's – this is also a look, OSU has not made it through a whole season without having offensive linemen miss games mm-hmm. in a while. This is a group where you look at them and say, if Tevin Jenkins goes down for a stretch, if Josh Sills goes down, if Ry Schneider, how good are we feeling? Mm-hmm. Right? Just because these are all listed as 2D guys doesn't mean all these guys are going to play that much. Like, we've seen plenty of top times where it's really eight guys that just shuffle and move around into five positions. This is fine, but it does feel like they're an injury or two away in this, going into a game with a couple of guys missing where you're going to have some real concerns. So we'll see how they look on Saturday. You know, with the players that they have with Sanders mobility and with Chuba, I'm like worried they're not going to be good, but you see what happens with Kansas State's offense. Like, their offensive line was bad. It killed their offense. So I feel like I'm being like overly negative. It's a concern. I need to see what they look like on Saturday. And I hope they look good. I do.
Yeah. Well, I'll go to one of my takeaways is having a grad transfer from Mizzou, Christian Holmes, which, by the way, I'll get into my point here in a second. I think it's kind of cool that players can wear zero now. At first I thought it was gonna be a little weird, but I think it's kind of cool. And also I think that a corner wearing number zero is about the cockiest thing that you can possibly do on a football field at this point. But having him as the backup for both Jerick Bernard Converse on one side and Rodarius Williams, meaning that you can plug and play Christian Holmes on the boundary side or on the field side as a corner. And from what I've heard, he's brought some juice and he's been really good in practice. over the past couple of weeks, he's going to come in and make a huge impact on this team right away for a position that, as we talked about in the spring and going into the offseason, cornerback was going to be a position of concern for us. But if he can play up to the expectation that I think they have for him, being able to play on both sides is going to be huge for this team.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's – well, we've now officially started by talking about the two position groups on either side of the ball that are the biggest question marks heading into the season. It is interesting to see – we've been hearing more and more that Jerick Bernard-Converse was probably going to get the start. He was probably done enough to earn the starting spot opposite Rodarius Williams. It's interesting to see Christian Holmes listed as the backup behind both of them.
Yeah.
So essentially what you're telling me is that there's a three deep – or just there's three guys that play the cornerback position. And we haven't seen enough from guys like Thomas Harper, DeMarco Jones, or any of the true freshmen.
Well, they're showing Thomas Harper move to safety. He's behind Tanner McAllister.
Oh, man. I just noticed that. Thank you. Okay, cool. So
I'm sure they're worried about cornerback after this year.
Anyways.
My guess and how smart I am with football, you know, judge however you desire, but I can imagine you will probably see Thomas Harper in like a slot corner, like a nickel corner kind of, in, you know, in that sort of package where you bring in like five DBs. I bet he still plays kind of almost like a hybrid type, but moving to safety, I don't know what that means for his development, but I think it's just maybe just be an opportunity to get him on the field more than anything.
Yeah. I also always look at things from the perspective of like looking at the roster. And I understand that everybody basically gets a free pass to come back next year if they want to. I'm not going to operate with that mindset because I just don't know how many guys will actually take that and run with it. Maybe Dylan Stoner. Maybe we'll get Dylan Stoner until he's like, you know, 30. But from a roster standpoint, that's an interesting move. It makes cornerback something to keep an eye on for the next few years, just with roster management and what they do with it. I think that's neat. I do think I was going to say the fact that Christian Holmes is the backup for both Jerick Bernard-Converse and Rodarius Williams is interesting. Maybe I'm dumb and you're gonna be like, yeah, that's every year. Is it interesting to you that there's two Cowboy backs listed as starters?
I do think that's interesting, but rarely do we see them both on the field at the same time. And I think schematically with what Casey Dunn's going to bring, I don't see many scenarios where both are on the field at the same time.
But then why – that's what's interesting. So why list – like I almost look at that and go, why would you list it that way? Like you're not going to list them that way unless that's how you expect to line up. But that doesn't line up with 2017's offense, does it?
Not necessarily, but – I think we should just call a spade, and the Cowboy back is a fullback at this point. They are not a major.
Well, it's a hybrid. It's a tight end.
They say it's a hybrid, but it's obviously not a major part of the offense because both are just better blockers. They're not as good of route runners. They're not obvious because, and I got a little bit of this. So I'm going to paraphrase a little bit what Mitch Giff and Adam Lund talked about, but like, people wanted to say, like, when the offense was sputtering last year, well, just give Jelani the ball. Obviously, they don't trust Jelani to go and throw to run downfield and run these routes and act like Travis Kelce. He's, you know, he's a blocking tight end. He's a very good blocking tight end. Same with Logan Carter, and you can split him out every once in a while to go and run a route, but they are fullbacks. That's really what the Cowboy back is. I don't see it as the hybrid that everyone – as the years have gone on and we – have talked ad nauseum on this about getting the Cowboy backs involved. It's obviously not part of the game plan. And they would rather keep them in as an inline blocker, an extra offensive lineman. And I bet we do see maybe two on the field every once in a while. If the offensive line is struggling, you have that extra blocker to help in a zone read or help with like a little duo power play. I think we see them more than that.
Was that considering the conversation we just had about the offensive line, having two Cowboy backs out there on the field makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I can see them running almost like a, what would it be, like maybe like a 21 personnel with two tight ends and a running back, and have one of either Logan Carter or Jelani Woods line up off tackle with either the other guy, you know, next to Spencer Sanders. You've got Chuba and a pistol, you know, Chuba and Spencer and a pistol with two wide receivers or three wide receivers. I can see a scenario like that.
It was just interesting to me because that's, I'm like, I'm sorry, are you trying to say you're going to start 12 person though? Because you only have 11 person starters in the But okay. So it's just interesting to have two guys listed as starters when you can only, you're like, other than that, there's no surprises, honestly, on the lineup. I'm excited to see Brennan Presley listed as the or with Landon Wolf behind Dylan Stoner. Seeing D. Anderson and Tay Martin both listed as ors behind Braden Johnson, from everything I've heard, Tay Martin was essentially brought in. I had Scott Wright on my show for the 10-12 for an OSU preview. And basically his statement was that Tay Martin was essentially, if D. Anderson was living up to their hopes and expectations, they would have had no reason to bring Tay Martin in. They kind of brought Tay Martin in, A, because they had the opportunity, but B, because D. Anderson just hasn't been up to snuff, hasn't been at, it wasn't stated that he had had coronavirus, and it wasn't stated that he was just skipping practice. It was just kind of left like either, or it felt more like he might have had the virus or something. But the point is, it feels, you know, Tay Martin was brought in from Washington State. And honestly, if you look at D. Anderson and Tay Martin, Tay Martin's done more on the field than D. Anderson is. You're almost more excited about what T. Martin can do coming in from Washington State than D. Anderson. I'm not sure how much play either one gets behind Braden Johnson, but I'll be curious to see if that's a battle and that does anything, or if it's just two guys that we got excited about coming into the offseason and just don't do a whole lot.
So I think we're going to see D. Anderson and Tay Martin play a little more than – I think we're going to see them play a little more than you think. I think Spencer Sanders needs a big body receiver on the outside, like a true X receiver that can go up against a smaller quarterback and get that mismatch. Oklahoma State really didn't have that last year. They didn't have that guy that could go up. And, you know, Braden Johnson's a good deep threat, but he's 6 foot, you know, what am I looking at? He's 6 foot 200.
6'0".
Yeah.
Yeah.
D. Anderson is 6'6", 230.
6'6".
Yeah. Tay Martin is 6'3", 185. Oklahoma State doesn't have, like, they didn't have that last year, like having like a guy like a Marcel Aitman or just that big body receiver that can go up and just win a ball when you really need it. And I think both of those guys are going to be able to provide that to the offense, just something a little bit different. And so I think it's just going to bring a little different dynamic to the receiving core. Now, how much run they actually get, I don't know. I think we see D. Anderson before Tay Martin just because Tay Martin got here 2 or 3 weeks ago, just got immediate eligibility. He's still trying to get in a little bit. I think the Anderson's been around a little bit longer, just depends on if he's ready to go because he just wasn't with the team for a little bit. But adding those guys in brings a different dynamic. It adds another element to, you know, being able to run different route concepts and give defenses different looks and give Spencer Sanders more guys to throw to.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. I'm excited to see what happens there.
My last observation, and we can move on. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but do you find it odd that there's no or after LD Brown at running back?
Yes, more so. I'm just shocked that LD Brown is the backup. Like, he must be really doing well in camp. Or what my fear is that no matter what I keep hearing, we've seen nothing about DeAndre Glass. I've heard nothing about him. Dominic Richardson just got there. Zach Middleton's a running back, but I was a little bit surprised to see LD Brown. And look, he was much better in the second half of the season than he was in the first half. Give him full credit. And maybe he'll come out this year and be second half LD Brown and not first half of the season LD Brown, and that would be great. He'll make a solid backup to Chuba. They don't need a backup to come in, and they don't need multiple backups for Chuba. Like, Chuba be all right. But yeah, I'm a little bit shocked that LD Brown is the certified backup, and Desmond Jackson is still just at best the third back. As much as we keep hearing like, oh, it was this or oh, it was that, maybe he's just not that good.
I don't know. We'll see. I just did find that a little odd. Normally we've seen an or the last couple of years. Even I think they had DeAndre Glass as an or last year at some point. So to not see even a third back on there is a little concerning, but I find that a little odd too. So we'll see. I imagine we're going to see more than two running backs at some point in that game against Tulsa, but to see just the true two deep either solidifies that LD Brown has taken a huge step forward this year, or there's not anyone behind them to trust.
I mean, there's an or at backup long snapper, okay? And so that there's not an or at running back is a little bit shocking. Okay, I agree with you there. I agree.
Okay. So now we're going to move on. We're going to do a little over-under segment here, talking about stat predictions for individual players at Oklahoma State, and then some team.
Why don't we do our ad break here, and then we'll do it.
You want to do that? So you want to do the ad break here, over-under?
Get rid of it. Get it done, and then let's do some over-unders.
All right. We have an over-under segment coming up here. We're going to make some predictions for the 2020 season, and you will hear that right after this. All right, Philip. So we have some over-under predictions for a few different – let's see. I have six different players here, three on offense, three on defense for Oklahoma State. You can guess who the three are on offense. And then we got a few team as a whole prediction, over-under predictions as well. Start with Spencer Sanders.
Do I have to guess, or are you gonna? Oh no, you already told me who they were.
Yeah, I already told you who. I sent you.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
All right,
it's a joke. Dude, it's 3 o'clock on a Sunday. It's been a long weekend. I'm not funny. I am dad funny now. I'm not like normal. I'm not even dad funny anymore. Like my kids barely laugh like at my jokes. So, granted, one of them hasn't laughed yet because she's 2 months old. But that's not the point.
All right, let's start with Spencer Sanders. We'll go over under 2,500 passing yards.
Let's see. In a
– it's a 10-game season.
Well, or 13-game season if you want to.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I got the jokes. Let's go with... Under? Yeah. Under 2,500 yards passing. We're just talking regular season. So listen, it's 10-game regular season. Don't worry about bowl game, whatever, anything other outside of the 10 games on the schedule. Under the 2,500.
I'm going to take over very slightly. I think having Casey Dunn as your OC, I think Oklahoma State's going to air it out a little more than we saw last year. Whether they trust Spencer Sanders to throw the ball that much, we will see. And then you have Chuba Hubbard as well. But I think they're going to air it out a little more than we might expect right now. So I'm going to take over, but it'll be like maybe 2,600. I'm not going way too far over on this.
Fair.
All right. Now we'll stick with Spencer Sanders. We've got one more. Over under 21.5 touchdown passes.
Under. I think, man, 10 games, that's the thing. It's 10-game schedule, not 12 like a normal season. If this was a normal 12-game season, I might lean towards 21.5 or 22, 23. I'm going to go under because it's a 10-game season. I think it's close. I think it's 20 to 21. I do think you can get it 20 touchdowns this season, but I got to take the under there.
Yeah, I'll take the under, but I'll take 21. I think 21 is a pretty good number for him, but I'm not going to – I don't – now, he could pop one game and throw for 5 touchdowns, and then that number increases. I don't know. But
yeah, Tulsa.
Numbers could inflate quite a bit. It takes one game to really, inflate the numbers pretty easily in a 10-game season. I'll move on to Chuba Hubbard, over under 1,650 yards rushing.
I'm going to say over. Two reasons. He had – 2,094 last year. Now, granted, that's in 13 games, so you would extrapolate back and think, okay, well, take the number of games out. But you think about those games in the back end of the season where teams were able to just load up to stop him because Spencer was out.
And Tylan
is better this season, That should actually help you. Now, the offensive line concerns me, like I said, but I will say over. Now, I don't think over by a lot, just because it's a 10-game season, but I will take over. I think he hits, man, I think he can hit at least 18.
100. Yeah, I mean, because this would, I mean, 10-game season makes it easy to average, like to do averages. I mean, you average 165 a game to get to this number. And I think he easily can see a couple games over 200.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take the over on this as well. I think 1700, 1800 is not out of the realm of possibility at all, especially if he pops off like he did against like K-State and Tulsa and TCU like he did last year, going over for 200 yards. He has a couple of those, and that number goes up pretty quick. Over under 11.5 touchdowns.
Over. He had 21 last year.
Yep, I'm taking the over on this one as well.
That one's easy. That's too easy. That's a Vegas. That's a bad bet on Vegas' part there.
Fair. All right, Tylan Wallace, over under 950 receiving yards.
I mean, he got injured in what? Game 8 last year? Or was something it 9? Like
I think it was game 8.
He missed – how many games? He missed
missed TCU, KU. Yeah, I want to say maybe game 7. I don't want to think about it too hard. But either way,
he missed like 5 games. He had 903 yards over.
Yeah, I'll take over too.
He gets 1,000 yards this season. Even in 10 games.
Yeah, if Chu was able to continue to do his thing and Spencer's able to spread the wealth a little bit and get the bracket away from, because the teams are still going to try and bracket Tylan Wallace. And until Spencer consistently can go to other guys, like if you get Dylan Stoner and D. Anderson, Braden Johnson, Tay Martin early, D. Anderson in early, then you're going to be able to open things up for Tylan. And Tylan's so good, he probably can still get through a bracketed coverage and still get his touches and be fine.
Well, and I think they're still going to target him. Like, he's not going to get targeted. And yeah. He was averaging 112 yards, almost 113 yards a game last season before he got hurt. To get under 1,000 in a 10-game season means he has to go average under 100. I'll say over on 950. I think he gets 1,000 yards.
Yeah, over under 8.5 touchdowns.
Not that one. Because he has those like big game potentials, you know, he had 8 touchdowns last year in essentially 7 games. We're asking if can he do a half a touchdown better in 10. I'm gonna say yes because I think he'll have at least one or two like 3 touchdown games, which will account for not by a lot. I think he probably ends up with about 9. Because it feels about right.
Yeah, see, I'm thinking I'll take the over, and I'm thinking in 9 or 10. Like I'm not going too significantly over, but I think you get he's got those games in him where he's going to get 2, maybe 3, especially.
I don't buy OSU playing spread the wealth. Texas Tech spreads the wealth. OSU doesn't spread the wealth. OSU throws to like 2 to 3 guys consistently, and every game, someone else might get a pass here and there. So
it's one of those things that I'm not necessarily saying Oklahoma State needs to do that, but I think to be able to just soften that coverage just enough to get him, you know, 10, 12, 13 targets a game. That's more what I mean. I'm not saying
Braden Johnson's going to get his. For sure. Stoner's going to get his. You're going to throw a couple of Cowboy backs a few times. Chuba's going to get opportunity. Like, other guys are going to get passes, but you're going to throw to Wallace a lot. Teams know that, and they still can't stop him. So,
All right. Now let's move over to the defense. Malcolm Rodriguez, over under 75.5 tackles. He had 103 last year.
Yep. So I'm going to say that's interesting.
I'm going to go under just because I think Calvin Bundage is going to get – you have enough linebackers that you don't have to rely on Malcolm on the field for 100%.
I thought about that, but I wonder if Stoner – if Calvin gets used in a lot of like – as a basically defensive end, should we still see him and Malcolm?
Like more – I can see them using Bundage as more of an edge.
I'll agree – I think you're right around the right number. So I have a hard time thinking, like, if it's over or under, it's not by a lot.
That's the thing. I'm going to go slight under.
It's more to do with just a 10-game regular season as opposed to, like, 12-game. That's what throws a lot of this off in my head is the numbers. Mm-hmm. I will go with the under. I think it's close to that. Because, okay, let's do some math here. I hate math, but we'll do math because math is an important thing. 103 tackles last season divided by 13 games is essentially 8. So 80. All right. I'll take the over. He essentially averaged 8 tackles a game last season. So 7.9. So close to 8 tackles a game. If he can keep that pace up, which I think he can get the over. So I'll go with the over.
Okay. Trace Ford, over under 4.5 sacks.
He had 3 last year. As a true freshman. He is the starter this year from the get-go. He better, honestly, as a guy who we're all talking about a lot, like he kind of needs to, honestly, like if he's going to continue to build up to the potential we all think he has, and I don't mean that to put too much pressure on the kid, but I would like to see, I think that's a reasonable expectation. I'll go with it over. Now, I think that's 5. I think 5 sacks this year, 3 sacks last year, 5 sacks in 10 games. It's a half a sack a game. That's a good number. Yeah. I will take the over. Because I kind of think I need to see that from him. I want to see 5 sacks this season. Because I want him to just be a sack machine his junior year. Like I want him averaging a sack a game as a junior. Yeah. I want teams to have to like double up on him just to keep him from the quarterback.
I 100% see him taking advantage of the offensive line struggles that we talked about.
Oh gosh. I wish we had Kansas State in 2 weeks. I think
he's going to pop really early this year because of that. And I think he could hit the over in probably the first 3 or 4 games of the year. And with the 15 to 20 pounds of muscle that he put on in the offseason, he's going to be a nightmare for defenses. I 100% can see him hitting the over substantially.
I think 5 is a good number.
I think he hits the over, and he might even go over pretty significantly on that. Colby Harvell-Peel.
That would be nice.
Colby Harvell-Peel, over under 2.5 interceptions.
Now, a lot of his stuff came on the back end of the season. Because he had 5 last year.
And that was when the defense, the first part of the year, really didn't cause turnovers at all. And then they just started causing turnovers all over the place. Like they were causing 2 or 3 a game.
Over 2.5. I'll take the over. 5 is a lot in a season, so it takes guys doing that in back-to-back seasons for me to think it's not somewhat fluky and somewhat, you know what I mean? Because interceptions, there is luck involved in interceptions. Now that's not to take credit away, because luck is a combination of preparation and timing. That means you have to when the opportunity presents itself, you have to be able to take advantage of it. People see lucky as like an insult. I don't understand that.
Yeah.
There's luck is involved in all sorts of things in life. It just means you got an opportunity and you were smart enough or well prepared enough to take advantage of it. That's what luck is. So 5 was a lot last year. And so much that came in the back half. I'd like to think some of that carries over. I will take the over 2.5. 3 would be good to me. Feels about right. I'll take that.
Yeah, I will take the over as well. I think he's going to continue to capitalize on what he did at the end of last season. I think Oklahoma State, the defense itself, is going to be able to capitalize and continue the momentum of what we saw at the end of last season, being able to force turnovers, letting Jim Knowles kind of let it rip a little bit and allow the blitz king to do his thing, get pressure on the quarterback when you have a guy like Trace Ford. I think they're going to use, like I said earlier, I think they're going to use Calvin Bundage as an edge, and you get Trace Ford and Calvin Bundage and just let them loose on third down in an obvious passing down situation, that's going to cause turnovers, that's going to cause interceptions. And Colby Harvell-Peel was in the right place at the right time a lot last year, which is, again, like we talked about, there is some luck, but that's also a ton of preparation, knowing where you need to be in the right spot and the ball finds you. That's what a lot of that was, and I can see that again. I'll take the over pretty significantly on this one as well.
Yeah.
Going over to the team aspect of this, and team and us kind of combined here, but over under 2.5 awards finalists at the end of the year.
So let's This is Brock. There's a lot of wars. So you would expect Chuba to be up for, is it the Doak? Is the Doak Walker the...
Yeah, the Doak Walker's running back.
Okay, what's the Canadian one he won last
year? Oh, that's a branding question. I don't know. But the Cornish.
That's not the point. The point is this. The point is this. I think Chuba could be up for two by himself. Both the Doak Walker as a finalist, and he'll probably win the Canadian one again. So let's give him two of those. Can Tylan get through the whole season and be a Biletnikoff finalist? I think he can. So let's go with the over as far as finalists, because that would give me three, and that's not taking into account. I don't know anybody else that I feel great about saying is going to be a finalist for anything, but that's three awards right there. So let's go with the over.
Yes, I'll take the over. I agree with you that I think, and it's also, it's the Cornish Trophy, Cornish Award, something like that. It's the Canadian.
Yeah, Heisman. Cornish. Yeah, that's it.
So, like the hen. Doak Walker for sure. And then Tylan being there. And I have a feeling, like I talked about Colby Hargrove-Peel, I think he's going to have a huge year. Yeah, it would not surprise me if he plays like he did down the stretch last year, that he's up for the Jim Bolt Award. Now, do I think he'll win it? Probably not, but it wouldn't surprise me if he ends up as a finalist for the award.
Fair enough.
That's a little too orange tinted glasses of me, but I do believe that he's that good and that the defense is going to be legit this year.
Fair enough.
Over under 4.5 freshmen playing significant snaps.
So this one's a little bit tricky, and let me explain why. Because I do think there will be true freshmen who play. No one's red shirts get burned this year, right? I almost want someone to still do a red shirt tracker just so we can kind of keep track of how many true freshmen play on a regular basis. I would say significant. That's the tricky word. Significant is vague because
it is. Yeah.
That could be, you could have three freshmen who play on special teams every game.
Right.
They're always back there on the special teams.
Okay, so that would shock me. So let's go with, just to put a little more of a number to it, let's go 50% of offensive or defensive snaps. Because freshmen are going to play on special teams, but that's tough to tell what they're actually doing besides just being a special teamer.
I'll take the under.
Yeah,
this is too much of a senior outside of offensive line. This is a group of players who's a lot of suit juniors and seniors. They're not going to need a ton of true freshmen to play a lot of snaps. So I will take the under on that.
Yeah, I'll take the under. I think Brennan Presley is your dude right out the gate. It's going to get significant run. But other than that, I can't think of anyone right now that's going to take that. I'm barring injury or anything else.
There are some true freshmen who are gonna play it.
I think so too. Yes.
I wonder if Dominic Richardson gets to play throughout the season some. I would be shocked if some true freshman offensive linemen don't get in there, maybe a little bit assuming because of injury. I am really curious about the cornerback position. I know we got those three of Thomas Harper's as safety. Your backups behind Williams, Holmes, and Bernard Converse are redshirt sophomore DeMarco Jones and three true freshmen. I bet we see some true freshmen get some snaps. Not a lot, but I bet we see some true freshmen get some snaps at corner. Not a ton. Probably late in games if there's blowouts for sure, but we do see some. Those would be the ones that I would keep an eye on. The other one I would keep an eye on, I know that they're listed as or right now, and you would think that Ethan Bullock would get the nod. It's Mike Gundy, so you have to assume Ethan Bullock's going to get the nod at the back right behind Shane Ellingworth, because that's Gundy. But this is a bonus year that doesn't count against your year. I would almost tell him to make Shane Ellingworth the backup and just be, thanks Ethan Bullock for being here. We appreciate you being here in case something goes wrong. I would make the backup whoever is the more talented of the two, because we saw what happened last year. And not, I don't mean this bad. It was the only backup. It was the better backup the option they had with Drew Brown. But, you know, I would say whoever's the more talented gets the nod. So, oof, yeah.
over under 3.5 new uniform combinations. Now, this could be a new helmet, a new striped face mask, something we've never seen before. I left this one pretty vague, but I'm going to take the over just because I think the uniform guys are going to pull out all the stops. That they don't really do. I don't think this is.
I'm curious about that this year with it being on TV and there not being crowds. Do you go all out in a season where no one's at the stadium to be excited about it, or does that matter at all?
I think
homecoming is going to be something different.
Yes, I think they'll go more. I think they'll do more in stadiums where there is going to be a crowd. I could see home games; they could pull out something new, something different because of limited capacity. I could see them doing something in Bedlam. I could see them doing something in K-State.
I'll take the under.
Take the under. Yeah,
we only have 10 games. 3 feels like a good number of new combinations with stuff. And it is really tricky with like, oh, well, they actually wore that one before, but it's a different face mask. You're like, well, that's the same, but okay. Yeah. Like, I'll say 3. I'll take the under. It feels right.
Yeah, I'll take the under too. I think 3 is a pretty good number there. Let's see here. Over under 1.5 drunk podcasts because OSU pissed us off.
Can we just say over, but I just leave it at drunk podcasts?
Fair enough.
Like, you don't have to say a caveat for that. Just over, under 1.5 drunk podcasts.
Yeah, over, under. Yeah, and I think we take the over pretty heavy on that one. Bless you.
Thank you.
All right. And last one here, over, under 8.5 regular season wins.
Under.
Yeah, I'm taking 8. I think 8-2 is like, well, I think that was what I said in the last episode.
Even with the new schedule. And we're supposed to put our schedule predictions in, and I sent them to Micah, and I kind of want to tell her don't post mine yet because I haven't figured it out quite yet, especially now that we've actually seen some games, which is kind of cheating but not cheating. But, man, like, OSU just drops a game they shouldn't. OSU is not going to beat Oklahoma. The Iowa State-Texas stretch, back-to-back games, a stretch of at Baylor, Iowa State, Texas, at Kansas State, I don't care. Like, it's still kind of sneaky, scary. I don't care what Iowa State looked like on Saturday. They always get better as the season goes on because they suck non-conference and early in the season they get better and it's annoying and they'll win more than – they'll be better than 500 and we'll all talk about why they should be ranked preseason and up and coming next year. Maybe we won't for finally – but like, take Oklahoma as a loss. Now you're at 9 wins. They'll drop a game they shouldn't. Now you're at 8 wins. Can they beat both? Can they get through Baylor, Iowa State, Texas, Kansas State unscathed and just lose to Oklahoma and a team they shouldn't? I have a hard time not saying 7 wins. Like, I want to say 8 wins. I really, really do. I want to say 8-2. But I have a hard time with it. I just, like, you've got to – we have enough over the last few seasons for me to say, you've got to prove to me that you can win 10 games in the regular season because they haven't done it since 2015. And that was a fluky ass year where they went, started 10-0 and I still, that team had no business being 10-0, but they were. Since then, 9 regular season games, 9 regular season wins, 6 regular season wins, 8 regular season wins. Like, we're looking at a 10-game schedule. I have a hard time saying more than 7. I just do.
Yeah, I'm still sticking with 8 wins. And I essentially because I think Oklahoma State, this is like one of their top 3 teams in the conference. They are. And the conference is incredible, as we've seen over the past weekend. The conference is incredibly top heavy. The Sun Belt going 3-0 against the Big 12 doesn't give me a lot of hope that the conference is actually going to be good as a whole. I mean, Kansas is so bad they were scheduling revenge games against the baseball school. Not great. Like I said, they're going to lose to OU. Death taxes, Oklahoma State losing Bedlam. We know this. And then they're going to drop a game they shouldn't. And I don't know what game that's going to be, and I don't want to predict one because I don't know. Because it's always a head-scratcher. It always is. It's always a game that Oklahoma State should go in. They are the better team. they go in with everything going their way and they just find a way to just pee down their leg. And I don't know what game that's going to be. And it's going, and they're going to find a way to win the game where they have five starters out and all that, but they're going to come in completely healthy and just lose. I don't know what game that's going to be, but it's just going to happen. We've seen that trend for far too long. And that's going to, it's going to be part of it. I don't know what game that's going to be though. And I'm not going to try
at TCU at the end of the season. That's my bet.
I could definitely see that because yeah, expectation, you probably have a shot at the Big 12 title on the line with that one.
Well, I think TCU's defense is going to be fine. Their offense might not be very good, but I think their defense will be solid.
Yeah.
Road game. Yeah. And I'll say this, and it's West Virginia. And Oklahoma State has no business losing to West Virginia on September 26th, but OSU also hasn't won a conference opener since 2015. Yeah. Like, I'm at a point here where I have enough evidence to justify why I feel the way I feel about things. And you say, well, it's a different year. It is a different year. But 16, 17, 18, and 19 were all different years, and there were some similar problems with all of them. A loss that shouldn't have happened, and a loss in your conference opener. So until OSU can stop doing those things, I can't assume they're not going to. Now, I may be incorrect on my picks of what those will be, but beat West Virginia at home to open conference play. And I'll say, okay, this might be the season that they actually have it. They finally get things going right. But the last one they won was 2015. And if I remember correctly, it's last one before that was like, let's see, they won it in 2015. They won it in 2014 because that team started 5-1. They lost to Florida State. Then they lost it in 2013. Was that West Virginia Road? Point of the matter is this. Win a conference opener against West Virginia, and we'll have a conversation of I can change my tune about how this season might go. But if it starts the way it always starts, I don't care how much better OSU is supposed to be than everybody else. The evidence points to this is what I should expect.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you. It's a weird year, but I still think this is going to be a good enough team to be able to win 8 games. But, you know, maybe I am.
It is good enough. It's good enough. It's not an issue that.
Yeah. I'm being more positive than you about this right now. What fresh hell is this? What weird. Yeah, that's a little weird. Okay. Anyways, let's talk about the game this coming Saturday against Tulsa. So we talked about what Oklahoma State is. We know Oklahoma State's the better team, but what concerns you about this game? Is there anything that concerns you about this game?
Nothing should concern us about this game. Tulsa had to push this game back a week because they didn't have any practice time. Like this team is not, should not be ready to take Oklahoma State on in any way, shape, or form. The best thing about Tulsa last year was the defense. It's all gone. The offense should be better this season, but it wasn't just like amazing last year. And I don't mean this bad, but I have no reason to believe, and no one I've talked to does, that OSU should have any problem with Tulsa this weekend. I don't think they're not going to be maybe as bad as their preseason prediction, which is like second to last place. I think it's like, I think they picked like 10th out of 11th. But man, like the betting line last I saw was 22.
It's moved up. It was 21.5 at the beginning of last week.
I think I checked it today and I think it was 22. Like, yeah, okay. I'm going to probably have to go and take that. They're bringing back three starters from their defense. Now they're bringing back 9 starters in offense, which is nice, but OSU should win. OSU should win this one handily. Also, yes. Tulsa doesn't have the benefit that Arkansas State did against Kansas State, that Louisiana did against Iowa State, that Houston Baptist did against Texas Tech. This is the season opener for both teams. Both teams, Neither one has had the advantage of playing a game and getting that under their belt already, right? And I do think that it has an impact on some of these games' outcomes, with everyone having abbreviated off seasons. Having had played a game, I think, is hugely valuable in a season like this. Tulsa has not played a game. They are not going to have a ton of practices. If you want a good comparison, I saw an article about how if you went back and look at that BYU-Navy game where Navy just couldn't tackle in that game and everyone was shocked at how bad Navy was, Navy hadn't had enough time to practice. It's a similar situation with Tulsa, why Tulsa got pushed back. Oklahoma State should not only win this one, they should run all over Tulsa. Like, they just should. Like, they should win this one handily. This should be one of the biggest wins in history, which means that they're going to – in history, in, like, this competition's history, which means it's going to be like a 14-point game, because who the heck knows with a year like this? But I just don't. I don't have – like, is there a part of me who's like, yeah, but just this weekend you didn't have – no, I thought Arkansas State would give Kansas State a game. I thought Louisiana would give Iowa State a game. I didn't think that those – that Iowa State and Kansas State would lose those games, but I thought they would get games from those opponents because those are solid opponents. It's also – I did the – when the line came out at, like, 21, and I did the article on it, basically, like, based on previous data, you should bet the 21. The closest game they've had since Gundy took over. Gundy – and under Gundy, OSU and Tulsa have played four times. Last year's 19-point victory is the closest margin they've had. You should probably bet OSU to cover.
Yeah, take OSU.
So yeah, I'm gonna say, I think OSU wins this one. Well, I think Tulsa put some points up because the season's gonna be weird and it's a first game for both teams. I could see it being ugly, but I think OSU should win this one fairly handily and by the second half be putting up points.
Yeah, I think I asked a question initially kind of poorly about what concerns me. Nothing really concerns me about this game, if I'm being completely honest. Oklahoma State is better in every spot.
Health of your offensive line. The balance of – and so when we did on the 10-12 last week on Thursday's episode, we make picks every week for Thursday. It's me, my buddy Chris Ross, who's a sometimes co-host, and Daniel Alexander of Grinders Blinders. He's basically our pro picker. We brought in somebody smart to be our third guy for the season. And one of the points I made with him talking about Texas was, teams, how much do you think affects the fact that teams are going to keep their starters in longer than you normally would in a season opening blowout because you just want to get them practice and reps and things that they haven't been able to do. That's exactly what Texas did. Sam Ellinger played way longer than Sam Ellinger should be playing in a game against UTEP where they're blowing them the hell out, right? I kind of think you're going to see a similar situation with OSU this weekend. I think normally you're up big on OSU, on Tulsa. Sanders is done early in the second half. Chuba's done early in the second half. You pack them all in. You put your backups in. I think your starters are in this game into early in the fourth quarter because you need the reps.
Right.
Because the players need the reps. Because Casey Dunn has never called plays in a game before.
That was going to be my next point is the one – I don't think necessarily it's a hesitancy or just something to watch is – outside of that one series when Sean Gleason was stuck in an elevator at Oregon State last year, Casey Dunn has never called games at the college level. Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting to see how he manages that. And he's not going to be on the sideline like he normally has been. He's going to be up in the booth, which is just another spot where he hasn't been very often. How does he handle that side of it? But I think this is going to be like, I'm interested in just how the offense goes. What kind of offense Casey Dunn wants to roll out there? How often are we going to throw the ball? Do we trust Spencer Sanders to let it rip and air it out? We know he can make every throw on the field, and we know that he can make the right read. It's just a matter of him just trusting his arm and just letting it rip. But I think what gives me hope for Spencer Sanders and why I took the over on his yardage is having – Tim Rattay is his true and only quarterback's coach. Doesn't have to worry about game planning and scheming the offense. Like you've seen with Mike Yurcich and Sean Gleason as a quarterback coach/OC. You have a true OC, you have a true quarterback's coach. I think it's going to help his development significantly. I think Spencer Sanders is going to have a really big year. And I'm hoping to see that first step in the game this weekend. We know what Chuba's going to do. He's the best running back in the country. We know what Tyler Wallace is going to do. He's the top three wide receiver in the country right now. Can Spencer Sanders take that next step? And I have no reason to believe that he won't.
Yeah. It's a good point. I do think that's one of the other concerns for this season is how quickly does Casey Dunn, and remember, Casey Dunn, it's not, it was another point which I was really interesting. And it was dealing with all the like the goal line issues and
scoring zone issue, yeah,
and things.
Yeah.
Well, for teams, and it was, you know, teams have had a chance to practice, right? You practiced your football, but you haven't had the opportunity to really work on these situational things, the small things that pop up that you're like, oh, how come you guys aren't prepared to be in a fourth and one at the two from offense? Why do you not, like, because it's a situational thing. Like, it's the situational things on offense and defense that they haven't spent as much time on. You have a first-year OC who's never called plays before. He's not had a lot of time to work on stuff with them. Keep him going as long as you need. Like, I don't mean this to be mean to Tulsa, but, like, this is not a normal season opener. If OSU was up 35 points, they put all the backups and just run the ball. Gundy, keep your conservative ass at home. Run this offense for four full quarters so that Casey Dunn and the players have the opportunity – to get reps that matter under their belts before you start conference play.
Right.
You have to. You can't be conservative in the third quarter to be nice. It's not going to help your team this year. You have to play. You have to practice. This is as much about practice as it is about the game.
Right. And I'll say this, and I think we talked about this in the offseason too. If there's one guy that's going to be able to pull a Todd Monken and tell Gundy to F off and turn his headset off and keep calling plays, it's Casey Dunn. Now, do I think Casey Dunn is going to go rogue and do that? Probably not. But I think if there's anybody that has the rapport with Gundy and the respect of Gundy to be able to do that, it's Casey Dunn.
So I talked to Scott Wright about that on my show and at the OSU preview. And I asked him, like, you know, this is a thing that people have talked about as a potential thing. What do you think? And basically he was like, the difference here is, and with those situations, you know, and Yursich did as the things went on, but it, Mike Gundy has to earn, you have to earn Mike Gundy's respect for him to loosen the leash, right? So Yursich's leash was super tight at the beginning, and people complain later and later into Yursich's time as the OC that, was it Yursich or Gundy? And it was Yursich, if you want to be honest, by the end of the things, because Yursich, I think, by the end was getting more of a leash than he used to for Gundy. Monken had the trust of Gundy. Holgerson, trust of Gundy. Casey Dunn has the trust of Gundy. He does. He has that trust because they know each other so well. The difference here, though, is with Casey Dunn being a first-time OC, he is going to use Gundy as a resource because he's in a new situation and Gundy's been doing this for so long. And look, you can like Gundy, not like Gundy, whatever. I don't give a crap. Gundy's a smart, offensive-minded head coach, okay? How he handles whatever, I don't give a crap about any of that stuff. When it comes to offense, you've watched him in the coach's room during the playoff and national championship games. The guy knows offense. He knows what he's talking about. He is a good resource for Casey Dunn. So I'm going in with an optimistic bit of faith that Casey Dunn is going to be able to do a good job at this, but we're going to have to give him some leeway, and Gundy's going to have to leave your conservative ass at home, man. This whole season, just don't do it. Go play. Go play and be aggressive. Because that, I think that is, especially in early parts of this season when teams are figuring things out, I think that will benefit you.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. It'll be interesting to see the dynamic of how everything works this season. But you have the players in place to be able to go and let it rip. And now it's just a matter of being able to execute that. I don't have much more to say. I think Oklahoma State wins this game pretty handily. There's this, you know, first game of the season, it doesn't feel like, this, you know, anything out of the ordinary from an Oklahoma State perspective. We say all this, and it's going to be a 10-point game. We're going to be sweating it for the last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter, but, you know, whatever. I don't think that's going to happen at all, but that's just kind of how things roll whenever we get way too calm.
Unlike the Kansas State game, unlike the Iowa State game, I think – and Arkansas State gets to play Tulsa. I think Arkansas State beats Tulsa. I think Louisiana would beat Tulsa. I don't think Tulsa is as good as either of those teams. I think Oklahoma State is better than Kansas State and Iowa State this year. I do think they're one of the three best teams in the conference. And I do think they should go out and handle Tulsa. And for the Big 12's sake, they need them to. Like, OU curb stop Missouri State. It's Missouri State. Who cares? But OU looked good doing it. Tulsa or Texas curb stomped UTEP. UTEP is – they're half the FCS is better than UTEP. But it doesn't matter. Texas came out and if you watched that game, it looked like Oklahoma State circa 2017. It was quite a bit of deja vu. The first play from scrimmage that scored a touchdown was the Mason Rudolph, the James Washington special. So get ready for that when you watch. Literally watching Texas this year is like, is this OSU back in 2017?
I saw that slant and I went, oh, I've seen that story about 30 times.
Yeah. So Texas did what they're supposed to do. OSU needs to go out and do what it's supposed to do against the best non-conference opponent of the three top teams in the conference of OU, Texas, and OSU. Tulsa's the best one. Not by a mile, but they are the best one. I'd like to see OSU go out and essentially do to Tulsa similarly what Texas and Oklahoma did to UTEP, Missouri, and that is definitively beat them. It's good for the Big 12. It's good for Oklahoma State, especially after what happened this past weekend.
Yeah. Do you want to offer a score prediction? Take the over. Like, you know what? Do you know what the over/under is set at?
No, I cannot. So my places I normally go, I cannot find the over/under. No, I can't find the over/under. It's anywhere. Like, it's at 22 now. The OSU is favored by 22 points. Basically, do you think they win by three touchdowns or more?
I'm taking OSU and it's on 45-20.
That's good. I hate betting numbers. Like, I almost like doing over-unders and spread bets better than trying to guess the score. I think a win of around 24 to 25 points feels about right. Even 28 would be good. I definitely think it's more than three touchdowns. Like, I think OSU wins between 24 and 28 points, so I'll go with that.
Yeah. Now, we get to do our favorite part of our predictions before a game. What is your official uniform prediction for Saturday?
Oh, God, I haven't thought about it. Man, this podcast is going forever. Sorry, listeners. It's the first one. It's been a while, so get over it. To home opener, they'll probably use some – usually use white during home openers a lot. So let's go to the 11 a.m. game on ESPN. Like white, black feels about right.
It's a home game?
Oh, yeah, it is a home. I told you I'm tired. It's late. Just ignore me. Just delete that from existence. God, I haven't thought about uniforms in so long. Orange. Let's go. I don't know. What do you think? I don't know.
I think it's 11 a.m. game on ESPN. First game of the year, they usually keep it pretty simple. I'm going to go white, orange, white with Patriot Pete.
White, orange, white sounds good.
They may go white, orange, orange, but it's going to be some variation now. Like, I don't think we see any black or gray in this one.
You don't think there's any gray?
Not in this one.
I will go white, orange, white, but I don't think Patriot Pete's here. I think this is just the brand.
Just the brand. Yeah. I don't foresee anything too crazy with this one. First game of the year, I think we're gonna try and keep it pretty simple. But it's still fun to try and think about it, right?
Sure. Look, I love the uniform stuff. It's a ton of fun. This is going to sound really stupid, but like I've reached the point in life where I'm like, yeah, that all sounds good. You guys, sure. I don't know. That's not a thing that I've had time to have cross my mind is uniform predictions. And it should have. I'll do better next week. I promise. I will be more prepared next week for uniform predictions.
Yeah, man. We didn't know there was going to be football a month ago. We're still trying to get our wheels spinning back to normal here.
Oh, dude. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, this is a little bit of a rough one. This is a long podcast. If you have reached this point, you're the real Bravo. MVP. Thank you Bravo. For listening. We'll send you something. We appreciate the fact that you will sit here and listen to us ramble for an hour and 20 minutes.
Tell you what, if you get to the end of this pod, I wonder if we have any koozies left.
I have a whole box of them in my closet.
If you get to this point in the podcast, tell you what, if you get this far, DM Joel. He'll mail you. Well, yeah, we'll get you a Cowboys Ride for Free koozie if you make it to this point. And then you have to like DM Joel or DM the Cowboys Ride for Free Twitter account, and we'll send a koozie.
Sounds good. Like that. We'll go ahead and do that. But hey, we got football this Saturday. It's exciting. I might be at home. I might be in the hospital. I don't know yet. We'll find out. This week is going to be an adventure. Phil, where can everyone follow you on Twitter?
You follow me at OKTXARPoke. Go follow my show, The Tendril Podcast, TEN12, the word podcast. We'll have an episode up on Monday recapping the weekend that was. Yeah, go check it out. It's doing really well. I'm very happy. We've got two sponsors this year that I'm very excited about. We've got discounts for both, including one, if you're a fan of home field apparel, which I am, you should go check out the pod and find out how to save on some awesome new shirts.
All right, follow me at JT Penfield. Be sure to follow the main site at Cowboys RFF. And we will be back after the game on Saturday at some point, a day or two after. We'll have a recap. And we'll not sure if we'll go back to two episodes a week like we've done the last couple of years, but we will have some sort of recap content for you soon after the game against Tulsa. Have a good one, everybody.